Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Hi, Geekscapists. Welcome to a brand new Geekscape podcast. I'm Jonathan Lennon, your host. If this is your first Geekscape, you've got yourselves a real treat for the next, let's say, 30 minutes to an hour, because this is the Geekscape Madame Web special. That's right. You're in the right place. This is a week and a half after the movie came out, but let's be honest. I don't think I could have made it through a Geekscape with my allergies the way that they've been going. I didn't have a voice and was bedridden for 2 days last week. After I recorded the last episode on the feed that you'll find with our YAOK co-hosts, new podcasts on the channel, I pretty much just fell apart. The allergies got me and it was just nasty congestion. And I lost my voice for the most part. You can kind of hear a bit of raspiness or a lot of raspiness in my voice now. But I wasn't going to let you down. I know you've been asking for this. This is the Geekscape Madame Web special. And I got Christian Blatt here to join me on this. And I just want to tell you that we're in for it. This movie was as advertised. What you've heard about it, but I don't think you've heard it our way. Christian's already talked about the movie extensively on the Geekscape Network, but now you're getting it from Jonathan's perspective. Because Jonathan is now, that's me, hi, your host. Welcome to Geekscape. If you haven't seen Madame Web, we're going to spoil it. If you don't care, or you've seen it, continue on. But my disclaimer is that if you guys have been with Geekscape the last few years, you know that I'm good friends with Matt Sazema and Burke Sharpless, two of the credited writers on this movie, who are also credited with Morbius. And I got to tell you, I've been texting with the boys, and I went and saw their film, and I will touch on that later. I'm not going to share the contents of our text conversation, but later in the show, I'm going to play Sony Executive, and we're going to talk about putting this Spider-Man-less Spider-Man universe together and why you would make similar decisions to the ones that were made and how making movies is hard. That's not an excuse for some of these films, but it just takes one little shift to the left or right and you end up with some of these movies that we end up with. Is this movie fun? Well, we'll talk to Christian about it and see what he thinks. I'm glad I saw it. But remember, I actually had a blast watching Morbius with Ian and Justin. And it was so much fun watching that with my two friends who know the character, love comic book movies. And I think what a lot of people have said since Morbius in perspective is it really throws back to the movies we got in the 90s. Like the superhero movies that they were just throwing at us, right? Like as we're starting to go into Batman and Robin, but we are also going into Blade and stuff like that, where it's like, okay, what is this genre? Let's just throw stuff on screen in the superhero vein, and something like Morbius is appropriate to that. That being said, something like Madame Web is similar to what we got prior to the MCU with something like a 2003 superhero movie, where the success of Sam Raimi's Spider-Man led to the green lighting of things like the Ben Affleck Daredevil and maybe some of the other Fox stuff, like the Fantastic Four movies that we got. With Jessica Alba, etc., where it's like, okay, like we are putting these properties on screen. Have we cracked the nut on how to truly present them? Well, I think some of the team had, And I'll tell you right now, if I'm going to make a Craven, if Craven's coming next, if I'm going to make a Morbius movie, I'll tell you I'm going to hire to write that script. I'm going to hire Burke Sharpless and Matt Sazema. And you're like, wait, they already gave us a movie. No. I'm going to hire them because there's nobody I know. And I know Ian Kerner, remember. There's nobody I know who has a bigger appreciation for the 70s Marvel horror and those stories, specifically Morbius, than Burke Sharpless. Like, he just loves the stuff. And Matt is a really solid writer. I walked the picket lines with Matt and we talked story a lot. And if you watch Netflix's Lost in Space, that's a great series. And they were, I think, co-creators, co-showrunners on that. And it's really strong. And so what happens? Well, we got to start looking at some of the other shared ingredients in these things. But you know, and you, we're really not going to know, but I'll tell you this. If somebody came to me and said, "Hey, I need a Morbius movie written," I'm going right back to those guys. And I'm telling you the truth. Madam Web, I think there's a way to do it. Did they do it here? We're going to talk about that. So you're in the right place for it. All right. Facebook users are already like, "Hey, I felt duped. I was telling everyone based on the trailer, this is going to be awesome." Well, we can talk about the trailer, but why did you say that? I mean, when has a Spider-Man movie sucked? Uh-oh. All right, Facebook user. I got you. I mean, I'm not gonna throw mud. All right, making movies really hard. These are things that have a lot of variables in them, a lot of different creative pieces, a lot of production pieces, a lot of expensive pieces, and you get a couple of them wrong. And I mean, these are unique things that are trying to be made like an assembly line, and therein lies the problem. Do they have a unique voice? Well, it's hard to make a unique voice movie at this level, but how do you invest in that as a studio when you have to answer to stockholders? How do you say, "Hey, we're going to James Gunn this," right? Like, you listen to the, you watch the James Gunn movies, you can tell there's a strong voice there. You know, he's got a ton of collaborators. It's all great, but there is a strong voice there. You watch some of these really, you know, Sam Raimi, there's a strong voice there. You see some of these directors who've been successful with the superhero franchises, and there's strong voices there. Ultimately, how do you convince your stockholders that you're going to put a lot of the responsibilities for creative decision making in one person? It gets a bit scary. So you understand why some of this stuff happens and you start to have editing or writing by committee, but we're going to get into that. All right. You're in the right place to watch some Madam Web talk. Let's roll the credits. Let's start Geekscape up properly. And here we go. Let me find the theme song and we'll be right back with Christian Blatt to talk Madam Web. All right, Geekscapists, you're in the right place for the Madam Web Geekscape special. There will be spoilers, but also if this is your first time listening to or watching Geekscape, subscribe. I promised you last week that I'd be sitting down with Chris Black to talk Monarch Legacy of Monsters, the Apple Plus Godzilla show. That happened last week. I just have not run it yet. It's an awesome, awesome conversation about show running a major, big budget sci-fi fun genre show, and we talk lots of kaiju, we talk a lot of Kurt Russell and the awesome decisions he made on set and with his character. And I just love Chris Black, and I loved Monarch Legacy of Monsters, and it was so cool to like pick his brain about such a big property, and how to do it awesome, which is kind of what we're going to talk about here with the Madame Web special, and how to do it properly for the big screen. Like, these things are unwieldy at their sizes. And I know that Madame Web and the Sonyverse spinoff movies of Spider-Man don't have the budgets that maybe some of the MCU ones do, but I think we got to go further back and see if the approaches are even like appropriate in this stuff. And for that, I need help. And when I reach out through the web of the interwebs of the Geekscape, I'm the Madam Web of the Geekscape, and I reach out to the hive mind and I bring back Mr. Christian Blatt, who's right here, who's also muted. You muted yourself, sir. Did you have a coughing fit or something like that?
No, that was our Aquaman episode where I had the coughing fit. But I know that this week it's possibly going to be you. In any case, it's sort of like when you run into someone at a funeral or in a hospital waiting room. I'm glad to be on the show, Jonathan. I'm just sorry it has to be under these circumstances.
Well, let's talk about that, because I believe that was Abe Duenas in the our listener and in the comments, and he saw the trailer and he said, this looks awesome. I saw the trailer and I said, well, this is a movie that we unanimously said we didn't really, I think any of these Spider-Man-less Spider-Verse movies, we unanimously as fans were like, hey, we don't really need that, but they're going to give it to us. Did the trailer look awesome? I thought the trailer looked like, oof. Okay, cool.
I had seen the trailer a few times by the time, I forget what movie I was seeing with my wife, but we went to go see a movie and she leaned to me during it and she said one word, no. So I knew I would be seeing that without her. And we detailed over on Marvel Movie Talk right here on Geekscape. My buddy Eric Connor and I, we went Valentine's Day afternoon because that's when it came out. And we shared our thoughts and a little bit about our experience. But it's easier when my wife doesn't want to see them because I can just plug it into the schedule wherever it works for me. And, you know, I did have the observation, which I mentioned on the show. We went, you know, it was a Wednesday afternoon in beautiful Burbank, California. And I leaned to Eric and I said, I was in this theater when it reopened in the summer of 2021. And the distancing after reopening from the pandemic was nothing compared to the distancing and a screening of Madame Web. First screening of the day, really. Yeah.
Well, I'll tell you what. I almost went on Valentine's after dinner, but I was so exhausted. I was just not going to make it. Like, I just was not going to make it through the movie. By the time Heidi and I were wrapping up dinner, we were like, let's not even try. Let's watch it the following weekend. But Heidi did want to see that because she's a big proponent of female-fronted movies. And I think that when we talk about Madame Web, and we also talk about like online bullying, not that the movie is spectacular. The movie is very much, if I would describe it in a short phrase, I think the movie just is. And there were things that wrung out the potential of it. Some of it may have been the post process, some of it may have been the rewriting. But it just the movie just is. And you'll find yourself watching the movie just being like, okay, like, there's not a lot of peaks and valleys in this narratively or stylistically. And I'm just like, kind of waiting for this to be done. It does feel like these things are being made by committee and you feel them strongly in these Spider-Man-less Spider-Verse movies. Yeah. But Heidi wanted to see it. And I do think that in the online commentary, there has been some like just jumping on it because incel factor. Like, this is a movie with a female lead with female leads, and I think there's a way to do this movie right. This isn't it, you know. And as I'm watching the movie, the thing that started entertaining me the most was trying to just look for the Pepsi tie-ins, like they were Easter eggs. That's what was getting me through it. Was like, okay, when are we going to get another appearance of a Pepsi product? Because even in like the coverage of the scenes where the characters are drinking Pepsis, it doesn't matter. Like, the art director was told to turn the logos towards camera, regardless of whether or not rotated properly.
And by the way, those were 2003 accurate Pepsi cans, the blue sort of sea, you know, so well done on that part, you know,
but Christian, the, the end of this movie takes place on a giant Pepsi logo. And it's not tongue-in-cheek in the same way that we've seen the Fox logo in the next Deadpool Wolverine trailer, right, where it's like, we're going to make fun of Deadpool in like the Fox-Disney merger, and we're going to have a giant set piece on the old Fox, 25th Century Fox logo. This is a serious battle on top of a burning warehouse where there is a Pepsi logo that they are literally fighting upon. And it is, as it's falling apart, it's going to be used as a weapon to crush the bad guy and this and that. And I'm like, oh, the Pepsi's logo is a major set piece here. Oh.
We should take a look at Pepsi stock since February 14th and see the negative impact that being associated with this film has had on it, because I feel like it might be irreparable. You know, Coke was able to recover from New Coke. I don't know if Pepsi comes back from this.
Well, I think honestly, people would have had to see the movie to give it a negative connotation, great point. Right? Because like,
great point.
That awesome trailer Abe Duenas saw, where he thought the movie was awesome. Like, there's no, I mean, there was no Pepsi tie-ins there or like product placement, but it the movie doesn't go 10 minutes without it. Well, why don't we just start at the beginning? The similarities, and you have to talk about the rest of the Spider-Verse, because the similarities in these movies were, these characters are getting these powers in like blood accidents, right? Like Morbius injects himself. Madame Webb gets her powers in utero from her mother, who's researching spiders in the Amazon. Why are they always the Amazon? And are they the same bats that are like, do they have similarities to the bats that Morbius was getting in the Amazon?
And by the way, honestly, probably. Probably the bats story point somewhere.
Feed on the spiders. And that radioactive stuff gets into them. And now, so, okay. And then from what we can tell from the Kraven trailer, like a lion, he gets shot and like a lion's blood goes into him. And it's like, okay, like the infusion of blood, that's like special blood to create these Spider-Man-less Spider-Verse characters. Like right there, I think you get one of those. And then you got to figure out another like way to get your character superpowers. But here, the wheels kind of started coming off for me in that first scene where we have Cassie's mother in the 70s taking photos, researching this miracle spider that's hard to find, and it will bring miracle cures to people if she can just get it. And when she puts it in the jar, you find that one of her helpers in the Amazon, Ezekiel Sims, is like wants to steal it. And immediately I was like, Ezekiel Sims wanted to do what? The treatment of Ezekiel in this movie is more like Morlun than anything, right? And now Geekscape is the similarities between these two characters are that they were both created by John Romita Jr., right? Like John Romita Jr. was the original artist on both of those characters. We've got, you know.
Oh, no, this is something different. That's something completely different.
Both these characters were originally drawn by John Romita Jr. Denny O'Neill helped create Madame Web, and there's not a lot of creators greater than Denny O'Neill. She's clairvoyant.
But Madame Web, sorry, I thought you were talking about Ezekiel.
She's introduced in 1980. She's a clairvoyant. She can see things as a mutant, right? She's technically a mutant. And then when I start researching this stuff and seeing the connections, I start thinking, wait, okay, you don't have Spider-Man. It doesn't mean these movies shouldn't be connected in their own way. Because Madame Web, part of her powers are tied into being attacked by Kraven the Hunter's daughter. You could have just given that role to Kraven the Hunter. You could have connected Madame Web to Kraven the Hunter in that way that maybe someone from Kraven's camp or this and that is helping Cassie's mother find these spiders, whatever it is. But immediately, like, giving these people separate movies and not trying to create a universe in and of itself makes these movies live and die on their own. Whereas I think that you could find interconnected ways to do it connectively so they could support each other at least. But I mean, you still have to make the movies quality, but narratively, Madame Web's origin in her story is tied into the Kravenoffs, of which Kraven the Hunter is like the main known one. And we're going to get his movie next year or whatever, but that's the next one up. Does that make sense? And so when I started seeing that, like, that job was given to Ezekiel Sims in the comics, Ezekiel Sims, created by Michael Straczynski, is an amazing writer and drawn by John Romita Jr., who I love. Ezekiel Sims is somebody who saw this whole, and it gets really spiritual, Geekscape. So there's a bit of spirituality in this one. So just hang with me. We're going to get through this as fast as I can. There are these things called spider totems, and Peter is one of them. And these are like, think like Nacho Libre, how he has not like eagle powers. There are different totems, and they inhabit people, right? Superheroes. And Peter has a spider totem. Now, Ezekiel Sims also has it. Ezekiel Sims basically has Spider-Man's powers. He's older. He's 57 years old or 67 years old. And when he meets Peter, he's trying to protect them from from like these oncoming hunters who are trying to kill spider totems. They feed on them like vampires. That character is called Morlun. In this movie, Ezekiel Sims is treated more like Morlun hunting spider people than Ezekiel Sims in the original Spider-Man movies, which is Spider-Man comics, which really confused me. Because I'm like, that's supposed to be Ezekiel Sims, who's technically a good guy. And the only difference between Ezekiel Sims not becoming Spider-Man himself is Ezekiel Sims used his spider powers for vast wealth and to monitor the spider totems. And later, if they ever do like a Silk movie out of these, and they've talked about doing a Silk series or a Silk movie over at Sony, that's the Asian counterpart to Peter Parker. The origin story there is that Ezekiel Sims put her in a vault to hide her from Morlun and the people hunting the spider powers. So when I see the trailer and I see Cassie protecting the spider women from Ezekiel Sims coming to kill them, I felt like they took Ezekiel Sims's narrative and gave it to Morlun's narrative and gave it to Ezekiel Sims. And I was like, oh, that guy's a vampire trying to get spider powers and suck spider people dry. And that's what this is. It just became so convoluted. And from the beginning, I just started going like, wait, what's happening? And by the time the native tribe in the Amazon started coming down from the trees, like spider people wearing what looked like Farscape outfits, and there was a magic pool where her dying mother gave birth to Cassie, and she's imbued with these spider clairvoyant powers, I was like, oh no, we are in for it now. I was like, oh boy, here we go. Did you have a similar situation, or were you checked out from the beginning?
No, I wasn't checked out from the beginning, but I was very hesitant from the beginning. You know, the Madam Web that I'm familiar with is that Denny O'Neill version, and this is Ezekiel, I believe. Without,
if you're watching this on Facebook, Twitch, or YouTube, yeah, we're putting a picture of Ezekiel up.
I believe I don't think it's signed, but I think that's Eric Larson.
That is Adam. That is Adams. Absolutely. Adams picture.
Yeah, it does look like
an Art Adams is the goat, and I see why you're confused, because all those image guys, including Eric Larson, worship
because of the era this Adams was. That's actually the main reason I thought it was Eric Larson. Yeah. But yeah, now that you say it, and a huge fan of Art Adams. But
Art Adams is
I was always expecting, and this is right at the end for where I threw my hands up and I gave up on Spider-Man, but I was still in at this point. I just, from what he looks like for our visual audience, I was always expecting this is some, like, you know, time traveler, alternate dimension Uncle Ben. You know, I always felt like that's what he looked like. Like, I thought this was Uncle Ben. And, you know, that's a more interesting story than this movie. What you said about him actually being a vampire and looking to suck the spider essence out of these three spider women, also a better movie than the one we got. And I think you do run into a problem when you have multiple rewrites and different people have different senses of the lore that's involved. I do have something that's worth, I think, sharing on screen when you have it. This is just, it's a list of all the writers. And I think it's important. And I noticed this when we saw it. So this is directly from IMDb. So it's got your friends. So Sasma and Sharpless. Those are the guys you know, right?
Yeah.
But then there's also
Karim Saga helped with the story. Sure.
Yeah. But then there's also Claire Parker, S.J. Clarkson, who's the director. And then, you have Karim, and then you have them again. And it's these different clumps of writing teams and writing partners. And, you can only wonder when you see that is like, okay, there's somewhere along the way, there's at least one very different movie. And I think when you start doing rewriting based on here's what the director thinks, all of a sudden you lose maybe any of the threads that honestly, that really worked. You had said that this movie just is. And I do agree that making any kind of content is very hard. And I'm usually not very critical of a lot of the movies. You and I will sometimes disagree on a movie. And there's movies where I'm like, no, that didn't really work out, but here's what I'm able to find in it. This is a movie that I found to be irredeemable. I knew someone who works somewhere in the Sony camp, and they asked what I thought of it. And it's like, I want us to stay friends. I don't want to tell you. And this person said, we probably all agree with you. And yeah. I didn't want them to get themselves in trouble. So basically, to me, I can't paint this with the huge brush where I would say this is the worst movie I've ever seen. It is one of the worst movies I've ever seen in a theater.
It's not the worst Marvel movie.
I see, that's where you and I disagree, and I'll explain to you. I would say that...
And again, this is all subjective.
All subjective. Yeah, yeah. Yes. By the way, I would love to meet somebody who saw this and had fun and was able to enjoy it.
Like, well, let me tell you, Gary Morbius. M. Kenny's son, he's in the chat. He says it'll be a movie cult classic in 15 years. My 10-year-old actually enjoyed it, and I love it. I love that he enjoyed it, and I'll tell you, I texted Matt and Burke, and I said, guys, I had fun watching the movie because, again, 12-year-old Jonathan wishes he had these movies, and he got one. And did they all get knocked out of the park? No. Is this one even a base hit? No, it's not. But that being said, like, I got to see, like, Aranya on screen. Yeah. I got to see Spider-Woman on screen. Julia Carpenter on screen. Maddie's, I got to see some Maddie's in this. Like, I got to see some cool stuff. And if they had taken the character that they call Ezekiel Sims in this movie and just made him Morlun, it would have solved him time. Like you said, he's time jumping. Morlun travels dimensions and travels the web. He uses Madame Web. It made a lot of sense for this character to be Morlun and not Ezekiel, because Morlun uses Cassie's web and what she can see, the realities, to climb it to different realities to hunt Spider-Men and Spider-Women and spider totems and suck them dry and take the power for himself. When I saw that in the trailers, I was like, that makes sense if that's Morlun. If it's not Morlun and it's Ezekiel, who's actually trying to protect people from Morlun and put them in these safes where they can't be detected before Morlun takes their scent, then this doesn't work. If this character had been Morlun, this movie would have been closer to something that works.
Right. But I think that honestly, the reason why to me it's worse than a Morbius or Elektra, I'm picking the two, what are universally considered two of the worst, is that those films are both anchored by, especially in the case of Morbius, an incredibly talented actor who I've seen be brilliant before. And it is a movie that doesn't work on so many levels. He's interesting to watch. Jennifer Garner, I watched her on TV for 6 seasons or whatever. I find her interesting to watch even in a bad movie. I think that, you know, they both give a compelling and capable performance in a movie that doesn't work. I find Dakota Johnson neither compelling nor capable. And shout out to the most recent episode of Marvel Movie Talk where I was talking to Chris Claremont, who had not seen this. Mm-hmm. I stumbled into saying the phrase, it's like looking up at the screen and seeing a bag of wet laundry.
Don't be rude. All right.
It was very hard for me to watch her in this movie. What I will shout out is I think Celeste O'Connor, who plays Maddie, is tremendous. She's in the recent Ghostbusters movie. She's in a wonderful, hugely depressing film that Zach Braff made last year called A Good Person.
That's depressing. I wanted to watch it. Dude, I'm like, cool.
Oh my God. So depressed. It's really well made. Zach. Brilliant performances. But he was dealing with some dark stuff at that time. But anyway, she's great in it. And I think Sydney Sweeney is just incredibly misused. Mm-hmm. And I think that the problem, I'm speaking for myself, my issues with Dakota Johnson, but it's like this movie is a prequel, but
they didn't make the actual thing yet. You know, so it's like this takes place 20 years ago because they want to give us all these spider characters in the future. And it's very cool at the prospect that maybe we would have gotten them. And, you know, I can't imagine we see any of them now, but who knows? You never know. You could get one of these.
We've seen all of them in through this in across the Spider-Verse. We've seen all of them in the Spider-Verse films, which are same studio, different department.
Right. Yeah, exactly. So, I think that it, I don't know. It is one of those rare movies where I feel like the lead didn't know what they signed up for and isn't really that interested in being there. And like, that's subjective because I was already not enjoying it by the time I started to feel that way.
No, I think in the, in some interviews, she has said that, that she was kind of like on the out from knowing exactly what is happening because of the rewrite process, because of reshoots, because of all the things that went into trying to veer this thing back towards it. And I think ultimately, you know, people love Kevin Feige. I love Kevin Feige. People besmirch the stuff that is happening over at Star Wars or the Disney stuff. But I mean, that stuff is so hard to do. But if I think if you peel yourself back and you look at the pieces you have, right? Let's say you're Sony and you have everything but Spider-Man. You have a Spider-Verse, but contractually you're sharing Spider-Man with Marvel because it's becoming increasingly valuable for you to have Spider-Man movies that are critically acclaimed and profitable and tied into the MCU. And now you have some of these other toys, right? Like, let's say you're Andy and you don't have Woody or Buzz Lightyear, right? But you got to make a movie about the dinosaur or Mr. Potato Head and all this stuff. Like
we have all the army men. We can do the army with them.
Right. And those there have been like Disney has been able to make movies like that, shorts at least, that are successful. And I found myself today thinking about this. And again, I know that there's a version of Morbius that Burke and Matt handed in that is very close to the 70s comic Morbius, and it's a bit of a horror movie, and it's Morbius becoming a vampire, and he's tied very closely to the stuff that was happening in the 70s where he's homeless and he's horrified by the need for blood and he doesn't know how to cure himself, and as he's trying to figure out a way to cure himself so that he doesn't become this monster and doesn't ultimately kill somebody, there's someone else that he has to stop. And the only way to stop him is to give into these powers and become the monster in order to stop him. I think that's a really cool narrative. Somewhere it just got washed up and it suddenly like his weird lab got turned into like it's something else. And it's in the idea of being cool became more predominant than being truthful to a character. And if I'm looking at these three properties, I'm including Kraven and I pitch you on them. Tell me you're not going to go for this, right? If I come to you and I say, okay, we don't have Spider-Man, because I think the trouble with all three of these, and I'm just speaking preemptively for the Kraven movie, is that Spider-Man is involved. I think if you take Spider-Man, I think that if you take the hint of Spider-Man, the possibility of Spider-Man, and of course we could talk about the multiple references that happened around the Ben Parker character here to Ben Parker's nephew that's about to be born that was not named, but like the amount of hints they made in this movie to Peter.
His girlfriend that is really the one that he's met that he doesn't name. The fact that his sister's name is Mary and that Richard is always out of town working for, you know, whatever his job is. And
there were so many references to Peter without naming Peter in this movie that I was like, guys, just remove Spider-Man from the board.
Right.
And I mean, Cowboy Fan, I love Cowboys Fan 92, who's over on YouTube right now. Sorry, it took me a while, but he's all caps and out. He's like,
Cowboys Fan is always all caps. Yeah.
Love you, Cowboys Fan. And he's like, nothing makes logical sense or just common sense. I'm with you on a lot of that.
Yeah.
And he says, but hear me out. Let's say that you're like, hey, Christian, come on in for the meeting. Have a seat. This is where we're thinking about going with these Spider-Verse characters. But immediately, the first move I'm going to do is say, hey, Peter Parker and probably Miles Morales, once we get to him, the live-action versions are shared with Disney and Marvel. We are going to make sure that those are part of the MCU. They're tied in with Avengers-like movies. And we can only play with the toys that are left. We can make a Kraven movie. We can make a Morbius movie. We can make whatever we want to make, but we can't use Peter. I think that removing him and almost as far from you as you can, so there's no gravitational pull to even hint at that character, helps a lot, because suddenly you're looking at the idea of making a Blade movie, in which they made two before they introduced Dracula, but Blade was introduced in Tomb of Dracula. Yeah. So this is like making that first Blade movie, but being like, oh, wait, but we have to reference Dracula. Well, you saw in the third movie, once they added Dracula, that was the first Blade movie that you're like, right? But we had two solid Blade movies that didn't even have a hint of Dracula in it. But today, traditionally, you'd be like, wait, Dracula's the name. Dracula's the appeal. We can't have a Tomb of Dracula adjacent movie called Blade without having Dracula at least in it. And that's kind of what Sony's doing now, is like, oh, wait, but Spider-Man's the appeal. We can't have a Spider-Man adjacent movie without having a reference to Spider-Man in it. But they're going to need to, because a Morbius movie, as I described, where Dr. Michael Morbius takes on these powers, it takes on these powers because he's trying to cure himself, and in anything turns himself into a bloodthirsty monster. That is a horror movie, and that is a horror movie that has a chance of a hero, and that is a movie closer to Blade, of which those first two Blades we enjoyed. If I were to come to you and say, hey, have a seat, this is what we're thinking about doing with the Madame Web. We don't have Spider-Man. We're not even a hint at Spider-Man, but we have the chance to make a clairvoyant movie in the vein of Final Destination with some superpowered characters. I think a superpowered version of some characters racing for their life, of which you probably have to kill some of them to make it stick.
Agreed.
Similar to a Final Destination movie where she has some some precognizance in like clairvoyance, but can't stop it because Morlin, and I'm just going to make the villain Morlin in this movie because it ties in perfectly to Madame Web. You can't stop Morlin. He's coming. He's climbing your own web to get each of you. You can try and protect them all you want, but ultimately he's going to start ticking them off. This is a horror movie, and it's a race to the finish, and it's similar more to Final Destination than anything. I'm greenlighting that movie. And if you come to me with a Kraven the Hunter movie, and you say, hey, we're going to do a Kraven the Hunter movie, but spinning off of Madame Web, because we're going to put Kraven in Madame Web as one of the people who help her find the spider at the beginning, because Kraven's family is part of Madame Web's origin. Because this is a lot of work, but I would say, okay, let's take a look at things like The Most Dangerous Game. I'm going to take a look at things like Ghosts in the Darkness with Michael Douglas and that remember the lion hunting movie from the late 90s, Ghosts in the Darkness. Right. Solid movie. And I'm going to look at some of these movies. I'm going to look at sniper movies. Hell, I'm going to look at Quigley Down Under and be like, okay, we're going to have a freaking sniper battle in this movie. Because Quigley Down Under is a great movie. And the whole tension built in that movie is, can they get away? Can they get far enough away from him before they're out of range of a sniper who can hit things from beyond anybody else on the planet? Like, if you start working with the actual math of these characters and turning it into something that is smarter, but again, I'm speaking from a singular position. I think you have to start making these movies from a singular position and interconnecting them properly. It all starts falling apart when you make things by committee. It all does. Yeah. But out of those three movies I just listed, which movie are you not going to want to go see? You'd want to go see a Final Destination Madame Web movie.
Yeah, absolutely.
You'd want to go see a Ghost in the Darkness, Most Dangerous Game movie about somebody who was like, oh, because remember, in The Most Dangerous Game, if you've recently read that short story from the turn of the century or so, late 1800s. The main character in The Most Dangerous Game is one of the greatest hunters in the world. He falls overboard and finds himself on an island where he becomes the hunted. Do it with Kraven. Because Kraven is based on the villain from that short story. He turns Peter into the main character from The Most Dangerous Game. Kraven, The Last Hunt, is basically Most Dangerous Game with Kraven cast as the... What's the name of the character in Most Dangerous Game? It's like a Russian. He's a Kozak. It's like the Krafanov or something like that. Like Karnifov or whatever. Like if you just take Kraven and make him the hunted in a Kraven movie, you're watching it. It's going to end in a sniper battle. It's going to be the hunted versus the hunted. You're watching that movie.
Yeah, of all the movies you're talking about, the one that works the most just as the concept is definitely Kraven. And, you know, you're talking about sort of a superpowered Final Destination. And I think that's a huge problem with this movie, with Madame Web, is that you get to meet these characters who will one day have superpowers. I naively thought that they would get superpowers in this movie as it went along, but never at any point do they have superpowers. And I was like, oh, I mean, of these characters, the one that I know the best is Julia Carpenter, the black costume spider woman who was introduced mm-hmm. in Secret Wars. And yeah, she used to hang out with the West Coast Avengers and Forceworks. Mm-hmm. I was like, I want to see that. And we get like, I don't know, 3 seconds of kind of a flash of the future of her in costume, and you know, and also Maddie and Anya. But it's so it's just like that's why
I know Maddie from earlier. M2. Remember right. the late '90s when they wanted to build like a second before the Ultimate Universe? They had like MC2, like the Marvel 2, and that she was part of the Young Avengers, where there was a young Juggernaut on the team, and so it was like all their kids. And in a way, Maddie's still game in some of the canon. As an alternate character, and obviously you have Aranya in a lot of stuff.
Yeah, Aranya's turned up in a lot of the more recent animated stuff, like
and the one
Spider-Verse
that was
just called. Yeah, the one that was just called Spider-Man. She was on. They sort of like all went to high school together. You know, Ghost Spider and everything. You know, it's tough to keep up with the continuity on that. But it was a character that they used, and honestly, that's the most of when I saw her is there. But yeah, I mean, Maddie was always sort of, I don't know, I guess it was like, you know, Amazing Fantasy shows up mm-hmm. and, you know, it's, I don't know. I think that these are all interesting characters, and it's almost like, you know, you don't want some executive at Sony to point at this and go like, well, now we can never do them. I think that these actors won't play these characters. I think we will see them at some point. But to your point about these being movies without Spider-Man, my assumption, based on literally nothing, is that there's someone at Sony who's like, we need to keep all of these movies with the back door in case we ever have a dust up with Disney and we're like, no, we're taking Spidey back. We're doing Spidey ourselves, which, you know, I mean, I never felt like it was going to happen after actually Far From Home. There was like that moment in time where they didn't have a deal in place and Tom Holland had to do interviews mm-hmm. where he's like, yeah, you know, we'll bring you something. So I think that there are probably multiple people at Sony who want that. They're tired of like, look how much money we had to give to Disney for this thing that we bought, you know? So I think that's why they keep it all adjacent to it. I think even this movie, if you actually had Spider-Man swing into it, a lot of the problems go away, you know, but
you would add Spider-Man to this movie.
Oh, I mean, yeah.
I mean, let's keep in mind, I would add either. If you've been listening to Geekscape for a while, subscribe. There's a rule here. I would add Spider-Man or Godzilla to any movie. The only reason I haven't seen Killers of the Flower Moon, it's not called Killers of Flower Moon -1. Yeah. But if it was, I'd watch the hell out of that. All respect to Martin Scorsese, who I love, and everybody, but like, some of these movies are too long. But yeah, if you put Godzilla or Spider-Man in it, I'm watching that. I'm watching that like the Lord of the Rings, like box set, yeah, extended editions, man. Like, you put Spider-Man in anything or Godzilla, I'm watching that. Or the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles or Astro Boy, or actually there's a lot of characters. If you just Monkey add a movie, oh my God, you add Guybrush Threepwood to anything, I'm watching that. Hell out of this. All right. I'd be like, oh man, it starts being incrementally better with those characters. Yeah. So yes, adding Spider-Man into this makes it better. But what I'm telling you, it's Spider-Man. He has such a gravitational narrative pull. He is the character that is figured out. He is the character that makes sense. He, you know, maybe not once they started turning him into Batman during the Amazing Spider-Man 2 movies that they made, but I'll tell you what, that Andrew Garfield, he was my favorite part of No Way Home. I loved that.
Yeah.
And those two movies were movies that I felt were responses to the Dark Knight's box office, where they went through and they were like the coffers and were like, what character do we have that we can make a Batman out of? And those Amazing Spider-Man movies were influenced in that way.
Yeah. No, I definitely
agree. Let's make him a loner. Let's make his parents mysteriously disappear, which they hinted at in this movie that Ben Parker's a spy. I was like, well, don't do it.
That tells me that they still have
the Richard Parker's a spy. I was like, don't make Richard Parker. They still Parker have a script.
If you remember, the second Andrew Garfield opens, like the opening is Mary and Richard have to get out of town.
That's when I so almost clearly left the
there's
theater.
A script somewhere that Sony still owns and they want to try and make. And this was the way
Parkers and the Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Don't do
by
it.
The way, the meanest thing I saw about the characters in this movie was someone posted on Twitter. This is the first movie where I wanted to see Uncle Ben die. I actually don't agree with that, but it made me laugh.
Adam Scott.
Yeah, no, and I didn't even remember he was in it when the movie started. So it was like the one treat in this movie was to kind of get that, you know.
I thought it would have been wonderful to have Morlun as the villain in this movie and have Adam Scott playing an Ezekiel role as a good guy helping Cassie save these people from a vampire who is coming to suck their blood or suck their spider powers. And I'll quit harping on that fact, but that's a very clear movie. And I think ultimately when you don't make a clear movie in comic movies, they can be clear. It doesn't mean they're stupid. I think people equate simple with stupid, but no, that those Star Wars movies are pretty, the ones we love are pretty really simple, right? Yeah. Most of them only take place on three major planet locations. Right. It's when they started getting a million planets that you're like, wait, slow down. But like A New Hope, you only have three places. Empire. If you want to Dagobah, the asteroid belt kind of take place at the same time, but you really only have three clear chapters and they're marked by locations. Return of the Jedi, same. You have three chapters marked by clear locations. Those Star Wars movies are very clear. Didn't mean they were bad, like simple. Like we enjoyed so many of the stuff in them. Holy Trinity, you know, like, so I think if you just strip things down, and this is something Stan, and I'm looking at my autograph Stan thing right here. The one thing Stan appreciated the most was the Shakespeare, the Dickens, the basics. And if in the first, I mean, if you were to hire me to Fantastic Four, I'm walking in with some Shakespeare. I'm walking in because that's what Victor and Reed are. Like this is Shakespearean, these relationships. And they're so clear in that way. And again, like you give me these Sony characters, you talk about these Sony characters, I think they need to be extremely clear. I think the blueprints have been done successfully in other genres. You just have to start putting these characters in them. Oh my God. I would watch a Most Dangerous Game, Kraven the Hunter movie, like crazy. It's basically a reverse of Kraven's Last Hunt.
Yeah.
Let's have a new hunter. Maybe it's one of the Kraven clones that they've done in the comics. And Kraven discovers he's getting hunted. No, he does the hunting, but now he doesn't. Yeah. And now you go for it. Sniper battles, hunter battles. I'd watch that movie. Kraven battling a younger version of himself. Didn't they do that with Will Smith? Ang Lee did that with Will Smith, remember?
I'm wondering sort of, I don't want to dwell on it for too long, but what are your thoughts on the way that they handled Venom? I think that they managed to do that in a way where, yes, he could play in the Spider-Man sandbox at some point, but he probably won't. Those movies aren't great. I think the first one's much better than the second. The second, I just kind of had to sit back and try and have fun, and it succeeded at times, and at others it didn't. But I think that does a better job of like, all right, we don't got Spidey in here. Although even then, it's like J. Jonah Jameson's like son is an astronaut in it. So they're still pulling on the threads a little bit. But back to my earlier question, how do you feel like those did Spidey without Spidey?
Well, I think that first movie, again, like I think you have to find like archetypes for these kind of movies, or at least a blueprint for these kind of movies in which they're successful. And that first Venom movie worked because it's a buddy cop movie, and it's like Midnight Run. Like it's like two people like handcuffed
it's
to each other.
It's lethal weapon. Yeah, exactly.
They're handcuffed to each other and they don't want to do it. Some of the stuff that works is that fun of having combating people handcuffed to each other. One's crazy, doesn't know how anything works, is going to do it their own way because they're an alien symbiote. And the other one is like, whoa, hey, I think if anything, Eddie Brock was too, you know, it's tough because Eddie Brock without Peter, with Peter, Eddie Brock is a jerk. But without Peter, they just kind of made him like a schlub and a never-do-well. And I think that if they'd have made him trying to be more straight-laced. And all of a sudden, this fucking symbiote comes in and starts, like, making him do crazy shit, like the mask. Because the mask is Venom. That's a Venom movie. If you look at the mask, kind of a Venom movie.
Yeah.
Right? And the mask works. So, like, go back and watch The Mask. There is absolutely, my voice is getting to me, absolutely a precedent for the stuck together or addicted to the other, like, buddy movie. And The Mask is a great one. But the main character in The Mask is very straight-laced. And not that that has to be, you know, Tom Hardy's version of that character, but, you know, I think those are the best parts of it, is when he's trying to do well and Venom's messing him up. I think the problems I had with the Venom movie were where there were logic leaps where Venom acknowledges that all the villain has to do is get to the spaceship at the end to win and continues to fight the villain instead of clearly just going and destroying the spaceship and then being like, well, too bad, motherfucker. You know what I mean? Like, you know, there was like crazy stuff in that movie. Like when they snuck in to get the symbiote in the first place and like she uses her key card to get them in. And then the next morning they're like, we don't know who broke in. And I'm like, motherfuckers, like, what kind of security do you have? She used her key card. We saw a shot in a scene of her swiping her key card to get them in, to get the Venoms. And the next day they're like, we find out who snuck in and stole the Venoms. We gonna get you. And I'm like, bro, her ID, key card. What the hell kind of... So like little things like that took me out of the movie majorly, where I was like, guys, just like, you're not like, just cross the T's and dot the I's and this movie works, you know, but
well, you
know, Boy Fan 92, he agrees with me. He goes, well, I don't really hate anything. And it's not that I'm a suck. I'm not saying I'm a suck ass, but I reserve hate for things with pulses because you can stop things with pulses.
So you're saying this movie has no pulse?
No, it's a waste of hate. A movie. I agree. It's a waste of hate. It's like, sure, I'm not going to hate that. Hate keeps me up at night. When I hate something, like I have Christian Blatt. Remember when you weren't on Geekscape for like 6-7 years?
That was a long time. Yeah. I remember.
Cowboys Fan 92 disliked this movie. Yes, there are things that I dislike. But hatred? Oh, hatred needs to run deep. It needs to keep you up at night. It needs to make sure that you are devising machinations for revenge. That is my definition of hatred. I don't want revenge on movies. I mean, I want my time back, but I don't want revenge. Yes,
well, there's that,
You know, other things I hate dearly, and that drives me. Oh, man, give me a Venom suit right now. Give me the Venom.
I think you're ready. Yeah, I think you're definitely ready. But
this makes sense. I know we're not talking about Madame Web as much.
Well, I think we kind of really hit the major points. I think you were able to shrug it off afterwards. I think I needed a few hour detox after I saw it because I was just baffled by what I had seen and what I had lived through. And, you know, even a movie like Morbius we're talking about, or even the second Venom, you can see some twists and turns where it's like, well, if only they'd gone this way, it would have worked better. I don't see this movie working. Not that the concept doesn't work, but this movie, it's not like, oh, yeah. You know, you talked about the first Daredevil, the Fox Daredevil with Ben Affleck.
Yeah.
I stand by the fact that the first act of that is actually really well done as a great origin story.
And the director's cut, when it adds some of the detective elements, I think the director's cut gets stronger as well.
It definitely gets better. But I mean, this was just sort of like, and I know we weren't supposed to like her character, I mean, and we didn't. But we can have an unlikable character. I mean, The Sopranos was built on that, you know? You don't need a likable character. But it wasn't particularly enjoyable to watch. And Morbius, you talked about how you had fun with it. I do know someone who saw this in a full theater where it kind of turned into a Rocky Horror Picture Show and people were like laughing really loud and interacting. I saw Cats that way. So obviously the film, not, I wouldn't do that in a live theater, but the film version of Cats, just sort of the theater couldn't control itself.
Sure.
I could see this being fun in that way, but
I don't think it's going to get there. I don't.
No, I don't think it can. Yeah.
I think it's too flatlined. And in Ultimate, I would have loved to see it with you and Eric. I love you and Eric. I would love to see it with you guys. Would have had a blast. But
and, we'll save and a seat for you for Craven, by the way, John.
Oh, guys, you know, in our group chat, I've been loving talking about the Craven, and I don't think I'm going to get the Most Dangerous Game with Craven the Hunter. I don't think it's going to happen. But
but you haven't seen it yet. So what if you did? What if you're sitting here and then all of a sudden you're like, it's like your Kaiser Soze moment. You're like, oh my god, they gave me what god. I wanted.
They did Ghost in the Darkness. Yeah. With Craven the Hunter. I think ultimately the studio may have felt it feels worn out by the editing process. It feels worn out by studio process. I think so. There's a movie that I enjoyed moments of that I also like the Marvels. I thought the Marvels started from a stronger place creatively, but the studio, the editing and aggressively cutting that movie down also took a lot out of that. Like the first 20 minutes, you're not with those characters yet. And regardless if you've seen their Disney Plus shows or their previous films and this and that, I think every movie has to be somebody's first. Somebody sat down with the Marvels not knowing those characters and needed to be introduced to them in a fresh way at the first 10 minutes of that movie and didn't. They weren't. They were thrown into a bunch of like body swapping and stuff like that that was happening as holdover from the shows. And I think that was unfair to that movie, but felt like it happened out of aggressive editing to get that movie into a sub. Like that movie's almost barely longer than Dumbo. Like that movie is so aggressively short.
It's an hour 45. Which is why it's the one MCU movie I've taken my kids to because I felt like they could get through it. And
but there's enjoyable stuff in there. The Flurkin evacuation scene I felt was like totally fleshed out. Like that was like, okay, this is something that they shot totally fleshed out. The Flurkin evacuation scene works. So there's hints of that in this movie. I wanted more hints of that. It just, there was none of that. And ultimately, like, I'm glad my friends got paid. I really am. Like, I'm glad. Yes. I'm glad they get invited to the big game. I'm glad their movies get to be on the big screen. I think it's hard to make these movies. It's very hard to make these movies with stockholders tapping the money and being like, hey, don't spend too much and make sure this thing hits all four quadrants. Like making a four quadrant movie, I just think that you end up with an in-betweener falling short of any of those quadrants when you don't have that singular goal, whether it's faulty or not. Right.
Yeah. No. And I mean, this, you know, look, this movie opened on Valentine's Day for a reason. And the fact that my wife leaned in and said no means that, you know, she's definitely who they should have been targeting. And she just wasn't having it. You know, she was not on board for this.
And how would you have gone? I mean, I would have gone Final Destination. Horror movie, Cassie or Maddie trying to keep people keep these people from Moreland with Ezekiel helping, not Ben Parker, not anything like Ezekiel and Maddie, as Ezekiel as a guide teaching her powers. And maybe there's an event early, like Final Destination, you got the plane crash that they barely avoid. You got to have an event early. They all get some semblance of powers that are slowly getting bigger, but now there's this predator hunting them. Through the Spider-Verse, through the web, and you got to stay one step ahead of them. And I think that's the movie I wanted to see.
If you look at this movie and you were to, you know, put everything on note cards chronologically between 1973 and 2023 that happens in this movie, keeping in mind that the 2023 portion is when Ezekiel gets killed and he gets beaten by all these three Spider-Women. The only part of the story I'm interested in is the 2023 part. Mm-hmm. This is like interesting as like a prequel, a novelization tie-in, a comic book tie-in. I would have liked to have seen at least some of that. It would have helped. If 10 minutes at the end of the movie are, you know, that present day stuff because he doesn't succeed. And I don't know why I can't come up with that at the top of my head. I wanted to see that stuff. That's the stuff that looks most interesting. There's a very misleading trailer, by the way, that says you should see this movie. We played it on Marvel Movie Talk. You should see this movie for Sydney Sweeney. And you see every second of her in the black costume where she shoots the laser. She swings upside down. We pointed out on our show, this is exactly how much screen time this has in the movie. What you just saw in this 10-second Facebook ad.
Yeah. And Cowboy Fans 92 is right. He's like, that's never happening. Yeah. They'll never learn. Right. I think money changes a lot of things. Production realities change a lot of things, and making sure you're four quadranting this stuff changes a lot of things. So it's hard. It's a, you know, they don't get off. They get off with a slap on the wrist for me.
With budget, there's always one point that I use is that sometimes a movie can still work even when the budget falls short. That first X-Men movie that most of us all really like, the ultimate, the finale fight scene happens in the gift shop at the Statue of Liberty because they wouldn't give them money to have it on the Statue of Liberty. And it is cheap, but it's like the story was so good. The cast was so good. It's like I shrugged it. I didn't think about
it. The writing was
years
so
afterwards.
Good.
Yes.
When she says, does it hurt? And he says, every time. When Rogue says that, I was like, they got this. I mean, honestly, when I sat in that theater in 2000 and you saw that opening and it said Auschwitz.
Yeah.
And you saw young Eric Lenscher in the mud, and I was like, they gone and done it. Because prior to that point, all I had as a reference were the screenshots or the released casting costume photos that Annie Colnese put up, where you saw that they weren't going to be in yellow. They weren't going to be in the, you know, this and that. And I remember when they posted that stuff, black costumes, possibly influenced by the success of The Matrix, possibly influenced by the success of what they thought comic book movies should be at the time. I remember being like, oh, this is going to stink.
Yeah.
X-Men's going to stink. I got to see it opening night because it's
a comic movie. Of course I went to go see it, yeah.
This movie's going to stink. And I remember sitting in the theater and seeing it open. It said Auschwitz. And you see a young boy. And I was like, they gone and done it. They went and made this movie right. And it held true. They made that movie right. And I think there's ways to do that with these characters here. Yeah. I won't keep nailing that point. But I think ultimately the studio is like, this bread ain't going to rise. Let's not even put an end credit sequence.
Let's not turn on the oven. By the way, what I thought would have been a great mid or end credit scene if they wanted to set up Craven. But, you know, they play around with this whole thing the whole time. The Ben Parker, we actually get his name. And then these other unnamed things. If walking in at the end, visiting them at the hospital is sort of a, you know, a de-aged Marissa Tomei who is Aunt May. I it wouldn't have redeemed the movie, but it would have been like, all right, they gave it to us. They rewarded us for 2 hours. But yes, we didn't even get a trailer for Craven at the end. Even if you don't want to shoot a new scene, give us something, you know?
Yeah. I think they were like, all right, we're going to get out. We're out.
Yeah.
Well, Geekscape is, I think we're out too. That's the Madam Web special, which I delayed the Chris Black conversation for. So I hope you're happy. Give it a couple days. I'll try and get it up by the end of the week. Cause I love Monarch. I love Chris Black. I love talking writing. I love talking TV. And that's just some of the stuff you find on this feed, right? There's conversations with everyone from, I think, Stan Lee to, we've had some amazing people on this podcast. Kenny
Johnson.
You yourself have had some amazing conversations with Kenny Johnson. I'm talking about the Geekscape feed.
Yeah, no. One of them ended up on the Geekscape feed.
Oh, my God.
One, like, about V.
I loved it.
On the Geekscape feed.
And Christian has had conversations with Claremont recently, J.M. Yeah. DeMatteis, as we talk about Craven's Last Hunt. Like, just, you've been scoring some amazing gets, and I'm so proud to have you on the network after hating you for 6 years. No, I'm kidding.
That's all right. You know, we worked through our issues that we didn't even realize we had. And yes, the most recent, as we're talking now, the most recent Marvel movie talk is a conversation I recorded with Chris Claremont. Oh, I promised his wife that I would keep it to 90 minutes. It's 2 hours and 20 minutes.
And that's explaining to do.
Your point about the X-Men movie, and we touch on it in this, but he had told me this before, the moment when Rogue asks Wolverine, does it hurt? And he says, every time. Chris stood up in 2000 and said, yes, they get it. And that made him realize that they understood those characters. So we talk about that. We talk about a great ongoing series he's doing right now, Madripoor Nights, which is sort of a flashback to that Uncanny X-Men 268 cover that people know with Black Widow, Captain America, and Wolverine, and the upcoming reprint of X-Men Teen Titans. We talk about so many things, though. We even talk about Madam Web, even though he hadn't seen it. He'll tell you what he thinks about the end credit scene in the Marvels. He'll tell you how he would fix all the Fox movies, how he would have structured all of the Fox X-Men movies. And now, all of a sudden, I'm starting to realize why it was 2 hours and 20 minutes. But check that out over there.
That stuff is water. Marvel movie talk, Geekscape. So that stuff is water under the bridge. We're pushing forward. We got Deadpool coming out this summer. It looks great. And it will make fun of all those that we can't fix. And we got more Geekscape coming. I haven't had a chance to watch these live action Avatar Last Airbenders. But I know there's people I want to bring on specifically to talk about it who are involved. I get solicited for other people to come on the show all the time. Geekscape is, I just, when I'm writing a lot or trying to make more creative projects, I don't have a lot of time. I gotta keep the Geekscape coming though. We have so many exciting things happening. I spent a lot of time today on Geekscape with my partners, Matt Kelly, George Callert, people, you know, you may be familiar with or not. Like, we're working on so many cool things in the network. So please subscribe to our other shows, search for Geekscape on your podcatchers. You'll find us. You can find us on Facebook too. The Geekscape Forever page is a great place for conversation. We have a chat going. It's a lot of fun. I don't know. I'm Jonathan. This is Christian. You can find Christian at Christian DMZ on Twitter.
Correct. And this week we have the show I do once a month, Geekscape Book Club. That'll be Thursday at 1 p.m. Pacific, 4 p.m. Eastern. Eric Connor and I will be talking about, it's a collection of the first, I think, 6 to 8 appearances of Echo in the pages of Daredevil. Hmm. And I wanted to dive into that to tie into the TV show. And I hadn't read any of those comics. They're phenomenal.
You've never read them?
No.
Ooh, the artwork alone. Oh, yes. My goodness. Like, yeah, those are great.
Yes.
Echo's a really solid character. And Geekscape, if you want to know what we thought of the TV show, it's back in the feed a few episodes. Like, go back around this, January. You can find those episodes where Ian and Kerner and I talk about the Echo series and how it compares to those issues. We do a lot here on Geekscape. And if this is our first Geekscape, subscribe, share it with your friends, do all that stuff. And we'll see you soon. You'll hear from me soon with Chris Black, I promise. Over and out. Geekscape is Geekscape Forever. Don't hate, create. Remember what I said about hate? Save it for people.
You're listening to the Geekscape Network.